Yeah.
So it's 4:30. I'd like to call this meeting to order, a special meeting of the Salmon County Public Hospital District Number 1. Today's date is October 14th, 2019, and the time is 4:30 p.m. So today's special meeting is a work session, and it's basically going to be around the draft interlocal agreement between Fire District Number 3 and Salmon Island PH, or Salmon Island EMS, an agent of the Salmon County PHD. I thought, since we've been working on this for 3.5 years plus, that I would talk about the reasons for the integration of Fire District 3, Fire Department, and Salmon Island EMS first, and then talk about the process and timeline. And I'm going to call on multiple people to talk about that who have been more intimately involved with those processes than I have. And then the nuts and bolts of discussion surrounding the draft we have at hand today. So, citing some, not all of the reasons for integrating Fire with EMS, and again, this is taken from pages 8, 9, and 10, and 23 to 25. Of the Citizens Advisory Committee's report. One is administrative efficiency and economies of scale. And administrative efficiency certainly pertains to what we have at hand. That's an administrative only interlocal agreement. Number two, improved response times, depth of volunteer resources, unified command structure, simplified levy management, potential financial benefits and economy of scale, unified training programs, better utilization and depth of resources, in other words, fewer arenas of duplication, and accountability and quality assurance. The whole process in considering this integration started back in 2016 with the so-called white paper, and Commissioner Mark Sweeney was the head of that special committee, the PhD. Mark, you want to talk about your white paper and what you did and what you didn't do?
It was formed to explore the idea of reintegrating Fire and EMS. The question could be fairly asked why they were separate at that point. So it was a matter of digging into the history, interviewing over 20 community members to get their perspective and their firsthand experience with the events. Karin Augusta was on the board, John, not the board, but on the committee, as was John Hinchcliffe. And so together we interviewed a number of people, and we gained that that community perspective. And the paper continued to develop, but was overtaken by the development of the CAG, and it was evident that the community was also seeing some value in exploring the question. And of course, the CAG was constituted by both boards, Fire and EMS, or correction, Fire and the PhD, and they moved forward with the entire project, writing their own paper. That goes back. The first draft I have on notes goes back to August of 2016. So it's been in process for quite some time. And it's certainly been in discussion here and with Fire.
Thank you, Mark. So after Mark's special committee stopped their proceedings, that was taken over by representatives of Fire District 3 Board of Commissioners, particularly Bob Jarman, and Bill Williams was initially representing the PHD. I joined Bill sometime into it. The duration of that endeavor extended from, what, May 2017 to April 2018 when the CAG was actually instituted. And Mark, you participated in that as well, didn't you?
No, I did not.
You did not?
No.
Even towards the end?
No.
Okay. So in any event, if you want to look at the minutes, which are online at the PhD website, they're referencing, you know, monthly reports on the proceedings. And that then was morphed over into the CAG. And who's on board to talk about the CAG? That's you, Nathan.
The CAG was an interesting project. There are, let's see, Rick is here. Rick was on the CAG. Chuck Daldorf, George Johnson, Dan
Paulson,
and then
Mark Tompkins.
Yeah. I was not on the CAG, the Citizens Advisory Group, but I attended all the meetings because I was the administrative support role for that. The advisory group met over the course of a year. It was established by joint board motions at a hospital district fire joint board meeting in April of 2018. And I think their first meeting was May 30th of 2018, or thereabouts. And then they, the town, fire district, PhD, each picked one member, and then those three picked the other two. So that was to get the most possible citizen representation. Their recommendation came almost exactly a year later. The joint board meeting in 2018 was April 4th, 2018. And then the joint board meeting to hear the Citizens Advisory Group report was April 2nd, 2019. I think I got the date right, Pam. For a while it was circulating as April 1st, so she's reminded me that it was April 2nd. So that we didn't plan it that way, but that's just kind of the way it happened. And they made their recommendations to the board. Let's see. Procedurally, the CAG was meetings were announced to the public. Public attended. I generated minutes, which they passed off. I have a binder in my office. Never had anyone request to look at it, but by golly, it's there. So. We got records. See, they were also put online and the audio for those meetings. Is that about what you're looking for?
Yeah, absolutely. That's good. Then that transition to the steering committee, can we address that?
Sure. From a procedural perspective, right?
Correct.
Okay. So the steering committee, just bear with me here. So the steering committee was established shortly after the joint board meeting in April of 2019. I think it was at that time. I think it was that day on April 2nd. There were five people put on it. There was Chief Kutzing for EMS and Commissioner Smith. And then fire selected Frank Cardinale, who's a retired fire chief from San Francisco, and Chief Collins, Norvin Collins, the new fire chief. He came on board about 2 months prior, so this was his first big assignment. Welcome to Friday Harbor. Here's this job. And then Duncan Wilson was on that as well. And then they had me serve as, again, administrative role to sort of provide some continuity with the CAG. One of the things I thought was important early on was that we get on the same page with respect to how we run things procedurally. I think I've got, here we go. This is old history by now. This was back in April, and we had this document which discussed how we would run things. There would be regular reports of every meeting written by me. I don't know if anybody reads those, but they're on the website, and I provide a summary of each meeting. Karin asked me where they were the other day, so someone reads them. Thank you for that, Karin. And let's see, those get circulated by the executives as desired. Let's see, there are, and then of course there's the monthly reports made by agency executives and commissioners in the board meetings, so we've had that regularly every month. And then of course one thing we made very clear was that there's nothing secret, so any questions that commissioners have, they can ask anybody on any employee on the board, and they would answer. And of course you can't do that with the commissioner delegates because of the OPMA, so you can't have commissioners asking one commissioner, they have to ask an employee, otherwise you run risk of running afoul of the Open Public Meetings Act. And likewise, the public was included in all the steering committee meetings, which we publicized and put on the website. And then let's see. The steering committee itself organized itself into steering into subcommittees, and there were a lot of them. There was boundaries, subcommittees assigned to deal with boundaries, both the outer islands, and when we say that, what we mean is mainly Stewart Island, John's Island, Henry Islands. They're the islands with the main population base, but we're also referring to a cluster of other islands around, for instance, Satellite Island, which is up near Stewart. There was a committee delegated to deal with the board configuration question, the town annexation portion, and then there was a outreach subcommittee, a licensing subcommittee. The licensing subcommittee is more or less wrapped up because they were able to get that EMS aid license for fire. And I suppose they will have more work down the road when they work on the ALS license. And for those, there's probably other people better qualified to speak to that, but basically basic life support is a lower level certification, provide basic aid on a scene that does not allow for transport, so they can't operate ambulances. And then of course there was a certain amount of project management as well. So that was the subcommittees.
I have a question.
Yes, sir.
I didn't hear a contract subcommittee.
No, sir. I don't think there was a contract subcommittee.
There was no committee to work on the contract?
Chief, do you want to address that?
When we started, we worked on operations. Okay, that was another portion of it.
There was an operations committee?
The operations committee that was basically Norvin and myself working on the operational issues. The work on the ILA, or the IGA, it started out as an intergovernmental agreement. It got morphed into an inter-local agreement. That kind of grew out of a de facto kind of working group. I think we started talking operationally about were we on the right track as we started working with the meetings. Were we following, you know, basically kind of past practices in other agencies that had done this
for time, mm-hmm. Let me just ask the question directly.
Okay.
Who was on the contract committee? Who did the work on the contract committee? I've asked that question 10 times, and I have never heard a straight answer out of anybody in this group or fire. I want to know that. Who did this?
You haven't asked me, so I was on the steering committee.
Who is on the steering committee?
The steering committee is myself, Frank Cardinelli, Carl, Norvin, and Duncan.
And who did the contract?
Myself, Frank, Carl, and Norvin. However, we didn't do the contract. We had conversations with attorneys, with both attorneys on both sides, and it morphed out of the original one, which was a boilerplate, and discussions about what other agencies have done, discussions about the mergers that both Joe Quinn and Richard Davis have worked on recently, and that's how it started.
There was.
Because every time I ask fire, they say, we don't know anything about it. It's all your guys over there.
As we had discussions with Rich Davis about whether we're on the right track, was mentioned, well, here's a boilerplate, this is what has happened in the past. And we took that document and started to play with it and make it
That was harsh. The first draft that we saw, that document, is that what you're talking about?
That was not the first draft that you saw. That was a draft that we started looking at and said, this doesn't fit what we need. And instead of having it out and dispersed and having, it gets confusing enough with multiple copies out there. We suggested some edits, talked with Rich Davis, talked with Joe Quinn, and tried to get something that we thought was a little more substantive and that was ready for us, and that was the first one that was released. And that, was that a couple go-rounds before that was finally said, okay, let's put it out there, Rebecca? And I don't recall exactly.
So that was the draft that we saw on September the 25th?
That was the first one that was released. Is that the date? That was.
Well, I'm asking you. I'm when.
It was after the draft that got pushed out was after the fire commissioner's meeting. So whenever the date was with that.
There was a committee when you guys first established the steering committee. You passed a resolution regarding the use of legal fees. And legal advice, because the mm-hmm. thing was you can't share legal advice from our attorney with another agency without the permission of the board. And so you commissioners passed a resolution that delegated our commissioner and Chief Kutzing to manage the legal portion of this and to have permission to share that. And I think that is the genesis of the subcommittee that worked on legal issues.
But did the subcommittee, was it defined in name? I mean, I'm hearing that there are all these other subcommittees that worked on specific things, but was that a defined contract subcommittee?
No, it was never defined.
No,
by name.
No.
There's a lot of them that weren't defined by name because we weren't doing... There's so many different things to do to put this together, so it wasn't necessary to set up individual subcommittees for certain things because they were all discussed in the open meetings and reported back to the steering committee.
I don't know. Was the contract discussed in the open committee meetings?
Yes, we had the very first one we talked about having a contract. Well, you weren't at 25. You were only at one meeting.
I was at more than one, but I did read the notes as well.
I could look it up, but yes, we discussed it at the meetings.
And Mark, how long have you been working on this?
My notes started in August of 2016.
A lot of work.
Thanks.
Yeah, the white paper was, 72 pages, Mark?
I don't recall.
I just read that, so... and before I forget, and I did forget beforehand, the reason that we asked the three, the four commissioners to be to sit in the front row is that even though we don't entertain during work sessions comments or questions from our community, we're making an exception with regards to you folks. So chime in when you feel like it, questions, comments, whatever, up your sleeve.
And Nathan Carl as well.
It was August 26th, and based on my notes, the path forward was discussed. That's this chart here that references the interlocal. I mean, I assume that's the concern here. And that was also handed out at the work session in the August hospital district meeting. I think the contract itself was introduced a little bit later, but it was... It's in my notes anyway. I don't recall how extensively it was discussed, but it was discussed. And I think probably people who were present have some memory of that.
Well, I had meetings with the members of the steering committee 2 days prior to the contract being made public and spoke at length about my concerns about any contract at that time. And at that meeting, no one mentioned to me that there was a contract that was actually drafted and was going to be made public 2 days later. So I can't really endorse the premise that this has been handled transparently.
If I could speak to that, I think it was a reservation in presenting something prematurely.
I'd say that again.
I think there was a reservation in presenting something prematurely. We knew that we had seen a boilerplate draft and said that wasn't right, and so we worked on it, and just really didn't want to create a situation where there was a lot of confusion before we had something that we felt we were ready to
And that push. Happened within the 12 hours between my meeting with you and it's published the next day.
It was
overnight.
I think that's
yeah,
right.
That's true. That's the true thing.
Yes, I think just that's right with the timeline.
Yeah, that is the timeline.
You know, I was at the steering committee meeting, and the fire chief and mass chief presented the idea of an IGA, of an intergovernmental agreement. They presented it as an idea, and only as an idea, not as something that existed, but as an idea. And there was seemed like general surprise. Duncan Wilson was surprised. In fact, he did not seem in agreement. He asked why, in fact, didn't we instead do a memorandum of understanding? And that was suggested at the agreement, and people said, well, yeah, could be. And at that point, there was never any suggestion. That was in August, as you suggested, the 26th, I believe, is correct when you introduced the piece of paper where it is mentioned. But it actually was not suggested that one existed at all. And in subsequent meetings of that committee, there was not any mention that a draft or anything had even been worked on. And it wasn't really until just before the regular hospital district meeting that I discovered that there was a draft agreement, that it wasn't just an idea, that it was something that had been worked on. So that was my recollection. So I don't think that it was at all openly discussed in this transition or committee meeting at all. I mean, it was discussed, not as though it existed. It was just sort of put out there as an idea, which did not seem well accepted at the meeting, but some people didn't say anything about it one way or the other. And then it's part of how I feel about this whole process was colored by the fact that it existed and yet it wasn't even talked about at the meeting as though it had existed, which speaks to the process of how this is happening, which is really, I think, what I find most upsetting about the whole thing. It isn't so much even about the essence of the interlocal agreement, so much as the process of how it's all being handled, which is poor, I think. So that's my recollection.
To your point, less than 3.6% of the time that this has been discussed has the contract been there to discuss. You divide August 2016, that's 164 weeks ago. We got this, 6 weeks ago? That's less than 3.6%. I don't think that's a way to do a contract.
I
was in the middle of a sentence.
Oh, I'm sorry, I thought you were done.
Okay, and I still think it's rushed. You can, all this other stuff and these graphs. No, it's rushed. You can't do a contract that quick with, what's your budget? Your budget per year.
This year, our budget was close to $4 million.
Right, $4 million, and we're spending less than 4% of our time discussing how that budget and all of our extended liabilities, which we've asked to be discussed in this group. I've asked it, I've been on this group for what? 18 months. I've asked it at 15 of the meetings, and we have a list of liabilities. I just did this in 2 minutes. I count 14. CID for $350,000 plus attorney's fees if we battle this thing, or $11 million if they go all the way. Witness fees. We have this building, $800,000. We don't want it. Upkeep of this building if we leave it and go over there. Continuing insurance on this building. It took us 8 years to sell the Inner Island building. And how much did that cost per year to maintain that building?
$31,000 and $33,000.
So over eight, $250,000. Just as an example of what it might cost to maintain this building. We don't have a buyer for it. We keep on talking about these things up in the sky. We have malpractice insurance. We have L&I. We have L&I here, L&I there. We have audit costs for the year and audit costs to transfer. We have ongoing contracts that we can't. They're written a year at a time, so we have the ends of those for the office, the telephone, short-term equipment. We have wages during the final phase if this goes over. How much are wages per month?
Well, okay.
I'm just asking a question. How much are your wages per month going
on? I don't have that number in front of me.
Okay. Okay, I'll go on. And then we have attorney's fees and general fees. We have accounting fees. We have liability for major capital expenses. And we have accounting wrap-up fees. I think that's 15 right there. Ballpark, those liabilities are over $2 million. The point being, we haven't even planned that part of it. And this money isn't our money. It's part of my money because I pay taxes, but it's all these folks. We haven't done this with this contract at all. But it needs to be done if we're going to be responsible, or we can declare bankruptcy and what to do then.
We're getting into the operations and the stuff that needs to be worked out. We understand that. As the steering committee and as Chief Collins and I have worked together, we understand that there are a lot of myriad issues that need to be resolved, but that's not what we're discussing with this particular piece.
I disagree with you on that. We are discussing this. We're talking about a transfer, and this is part of the transfer.
We're talking about an administrative agreement where we're providing oversight, and I shouldn't say oversight, but we're providing an integrated overview of the entire emergency management system. We're not dealing with the operations, and what we're talking about with this particular ILA, and I think that's where some of the confusion comes in, because as the advisory group was working, they talked about, in the elections section, how do we fully integrate the system? And every single option that they came up with starts with an ILA. The ILA that they first talked about, that they said was the simplest, and probably not necessarily the best idea, was to take EMS, lock, stock, and barrel, move it over to fire, and write them a check to take care of it. That's not what we're talking about here. So what we're talking about is something completely different that says where we came from, and what I hope to do, and I wrote a couple of things on the board, and I hope I wasn't too terribly presumptuous. There's a couple of things that I hope we can all keep in mind. Is number one is, how do we best serve our community? That's the number one piece of focus that we need to do. And the number two thing is, how do we best serve those who serve the community? And I think if we keep those two things in mind, how we get there will all work out. But I think we can all agree that that's what we're trying to accomplish. That's the end game we're trying to accomplish. At least that's what I feel like has been happening, and that I would like to see continue forward. It's now we're just working out the details of how to get there. But the interesting thing about, I think what we're trying to do is, as we talk with the attorneys, and we've talked about to other agencies, these are people who come together, either a town coming into a county, or two different agencies coming together, they talk about how best to integrate, and one of the things that they suggested to us was taking the administration and putting them together. Because now, it's kind of like using the lessons we learned from 9/11. Okay, that tragedy that happened brought a whole bunch of people all across the community together. And everybody came with the idea of, I want to help. But what they found out was they didn't necessarily speak the same language. 10 codes. I'm 10-10, I'm 10-4, what's your 10-20? Those kinds of things that people didn't necessarily understand. They did things operationally different. And what came out of that was the whole National Incident Management System. And FEMA's been involved with that, the National Fire Academy's been involved with that, and the whole Incident Command System, ICS, you'll hear that. And they realize the importance of having somebody who's in charge, one person who's in charge, who understands the big picture, the overview. And it also helps with, you'll hear a couple of terms that we use, unity of command and chain of command. Chain of command means that one person, you know who you get orders from, you know who you respond back to. Okay? And span of control. If you realize that once you get more than about 7 people that you're directly supervising, things get really complicated and hard to manage. And the incident command system kind of addressed all those things. I think what this ILA is doing is really kind of following the incident command system. It's putting one person in charge, but it's still maintaining the integrity of the PhD, because oversight and finances, per this agreement, stay with the PhD in terms of EMS. Oversight and finances, in terms of this agreement, stay with the fire district for fire services, but we have somebody at the top who's going to have the big picture in view, who can then coordinate the finances. We can figure out the operational things that we need to do, but it gives us the time to do this and the permission to do it as we move forward. Because there are still lots of issues to be resolved, but we're resolving a lot of them. We're coming close on resolving the district boundaries. We're coming close on understanding how we're going to fund this beast we call emergency services, this integrated system. So it's not the same ILA that was proposed as option number one by the advisory group. It's a different ILA.
So when you say we're coming close, according to, now let's talk about coming close as to the CAG recommendations. How close are we to the CAG recommendations was a 5-member board? How close are we on that? I've heard comments that fire will only do 3. I've heard that from their commissioners at open meetings.
Well, the advisory group suggested that, but part of their premise was to say that allows for the town, and that allows for someone with medical knowledge, but we found out that legally we can't require that to be those 2 positions on that.
That has nothing to do with my question. My question is, how close are we on a 5-member panel?
That, frankly, that's completely up to the fire district to decide.
Correct.
It is.
So the answer is we're not close on that at all, because they've said they won't do it.
Well, it's not our prerogative.
We're using the CAG to push what we want, but when we don't like, we don't get. You can't have it both ways.
But
governance. That was their recommendation. It was a combined recommendation. If that was pulled out, they may not have made the other recommendations. And they spent a year on this. And I attended many of those meetings and read all of the notes on it, and they were very adamant about that. Whether or not there's a position on it or not, you have representation. How close are we on the CAG recommendation that there's annexation in the city?
That vote is due to go out to the public April of 2020.
Well, that hasn't even moved on to town council meetings. They haven't talked about that. They've talked about it, they haven't made any motions. That is high in the sky. It's pie in the sky.
But again, Dr. Appleton, we as a PhD can't.
My point is, all of those went together to make the recommendation. And we're doing one part of the recommendation, supposedly. But we're using the CAG as justification for that. When you're parry checking the CAG to make your recommendations. I know it's frustrating.
But there are,
I know it's fresh,
and I understand, and I don't mean for us to be adversarial or, you know, at odds with you, because we're all working together at the same kind of thing. And you and I are making direct eye contact, and I don't want us to feel like we're fighting each other. Uh-huh. I'm just trying to explain some things, and the fact that there are pieces that the advisory group put together that we just can't do and can't and really don't have any control over. What the town council does, the town's represented by a set of elected officials. There are town council members, there's a mayor, there's a town administrator. Those people answer to the town. We can't force the town to do it our way. So the fire district, the same thing. They have three commissioners that are elected by the fire district. They answer to their constituency. They represent their constituents. We can ask, we can say, have you considered? But we can't force them to do it. Does that make integration a bad idea?
Is there anything in this agreement that helps them do that?
I don't know.
Is it important to have that done?